Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Sal Capaccio joining us here. It's a Football Friday, a Buffalo Bills victory Friday. You know what? When we come back on Monday, we're calling that Victory Monday, too. You know, Fridays, Mondays, days of the week, it's tough. Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino. Call the 8s. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, Crosby's hometown fuel, game day ready since 1922.
It's kind of like when NBC has the Thursday night opener, but they still have all Monday. The graphics that say Sunday night football.
Right.
Because it's the Sunday night football show,
right,
even
Thursday.
Though it's on a Thursday.
Yeah, it's confusing. Yeah. Meanwhile, Sal Capaccio joins us here. Sal, I've got a tough ask for you here, but I want to... Joe said something in the update that it reminds me of something, and I don't remember what it's from. But Stephen Ross, the owner, saying they're not going to fire Mike McDaniel unless... What was it?
Rappaport said that Stephen Ross doesn't want to fire McDaniel. He would only get to that point if fans either stop showing up to the stadium or the players quit on him.
Right. So, to me, I hear that, and I think it's one of those moments where, why would he say that? Why are you saying? Is he telling you this is how it's... And there's a movie or a television, a famous movie event where... There's some announcement, and whether it's the cops or the criminal or the good guy or the bad guy, somebody says something, and everyone says, why would he say that? The idea is Stephen Ross just said to his fans, just don't show up. Don't show up, and you give me the green light.
Wow.
You let me know what you want me to do here. If the fans don't show up, I feel like the fans weren't showing up already.
That's the joke I was waiting for someone to make.
Alan
right?
Poupar,
Miami fans don't show up anyway.
We talked with Alan Poupar of SI.com, and he had already said the fans have checked out.
Right.
So by Stephen Ross saying that, it's, why would he say that? It's the giveaway. He's saying, like, I'll do it. You know, just stop showing up, guys. Anyway, if anybody can remember that movie, that's a call out to some...
I don't know.
Caper.
Sal, I don't know if you know it. I don't know it.
Put me an arrow down.
I don't know the movie, but it reminds me of, I think, even with our own kids. Like, well, really, I can't do that unless this happens.
Right.
Oh, you know what I mean?
Right. If only we could.
Little bribe there, right? You want to make it happen. So that's kind of a weird one right there. I thought the Dolphins were very fightful last night.
Yes.
They had a lot of fight. And I just think going into this game, the talk of... Like it's crazy. Even after the game now, look, I'll be the first to tell you, we could talk about it. I don't think the Bills played their best football game. There's no doubt. So, yeah, certainly a lot of things that you could say they should have done this better, that better. But, man, I think the over-expectation of the way this team should have just blown them out. This is the NFL, man. Holy cow, they just won a division game by 10 points. 31, they scored 30 points again. But because it wasn't the 40-point blowout of a team that was 0-2, I think that it seems like a lot of people are upset this morning about a lot of things. And I think you have to put in perspective, this is about the Dolphins now, what they were trying to accomplish. This is a team trying to salvage their season. They did have a lot of fight. It's a division game. And they gave everything they had. No doubt the Bills did not play their best game. And there's things that they have to do differently. But I thought the Dolphins were a very competitive team last night and did everything they could to try and salvage their season after 2 weeks.
I do too. I thought that it was a game with plenty of fight, and the rivalry was ticking up there, Sal. It got physical, right?
Yeah.
Allen gets hit from behind, and they're
Allen got on a guy's face.
Yeah. Like you saw a good amount of fire from the Dolphins. So if you're trying to make the case they're quitting on their coach, I think it's a tough case to make today.
Agreed. I don't think they were quitting on their coach at all, and they now have another nationally televised game for their next game. It's a Monday night against the Jets.
Right.
They'll have 11 days for that one. So, maybe things, again, you evaluate that. I felt that if they were competitive and it was close in any regard, that there was going to be no firing of Mike McDaniel. The only way would be if it really truly got super bad and they laid down. They did not lay down, so I don't think that's the case. But at the end of the day, the Bills beat them by 10 points still. As much as we could say, like, the Bills didn't do this or that, they still scored 30 points. They won a division game. And, you know, now they themselves have 10 days to kind of reset themselves and get ready for another one.
We should be thanking them for when they make it a little interesting, Sal. You know, come on, a little drama.
Yeah.
You know, not too bad. Do you want the answer to my query?
On what the movie's from?
Yes, I've got it.
I can't wait till this to be a movie from, 1986.
No. 90s. This is an MVP performance from Adam, who remembered this. So Stephen Ross saying, I can't fire him unless you stop showing up to the games. It's Dustin Hoffman in the movie Outbreak. When he tells the guy, like, hey, that bomber can't complete its run if you get in its way. Like, why would he say that? He tells him how to.
Yes. That's right, yes.
Yes, thank you.
I don't know if Joe's ever seen Outbreak.
I haven't, and I just looked it up, and the movie poster is like a lemur? A monkey? Spider monkey on it?
You should see Outbreak.
This looks crazy.
It's great. Yeah. Anyway, Sal, all right, arrow up, arrow down. We'll get to that in a moment, but I want to take a moment just to talk about the final Dolphins game, the scene, Thursday Night Football. You know, Bills fans, we are living a life where we get all these spotlights, right? Where Western New York ends up in the spotlight, and now it's about the new stadium. And I feel like Amazon did a lot with that, talking about Fitz going over there, and Fitz on the broadcast, and Fitz on the field. And like, I know you're at the game. It's always these glow up moments for the Bills. They really have so many of these days. And here comes another one. Primetime, Dolphins win, ho hum. You know, the Bills end up looking like a top class organization, like they often do in these spots.
I didn't know that Fitz took off his shirt until Yana showed me this morning when I got up, and she's like, did you see Fitz last night? I said, yes, I saw him. I actually did see Fitz after the game. The Amazon crew was hanging out, so I talked to him for a minute, and she goes, no, did you see he took off his shirt? I know I didn't see that part. So she showed me the video, and Josh was on there, and he was chanting, take it off, with the fans. And he took off his shirt, and you know, Fitz is loved by Buffalo. And afterwards, I don't know if you guys saw, but when I was actually standing on the field watching them, and they're trying some really hot wings, him and Andrew Whitworth and a few of the other people on crew. And as far as your point about, you know, Buffalo and the way that they look, listen, the NFL loves Buffalo right now. They do. They love Buffalo. They love the Buffalo Bills. They love Josh Allen. They love everything about what's going on here. Every year I interview Mike North, as you guys know, who's one of the head schedule makers of the league. And every year he not only says that the Bills are still must-watch TV, it gets bigger and better every year for them. They want as much of the Bills as possible. CBS, NBC, Amazon, ESPN, it doesn't matter. Everybody wants a piece of the Buffalo Bills. They want a piece of Josh Allen. This city, this stadium, the fan base resonates around the league. Yep. And it was another really good showing last night, and it does not hurt. Hey, there's one thing to say. Snow globes and the aesthetics of a December game are great, but it also doesn't hurt when you have absolutely gorgeous September weather, and everybody I talk to is like, man, this is great weather out here, and we love coming here like this. So all of that really matters.
Sal Capaccio. All right, Sal. To the game itself, we saw, I don't say like breakout performances, but this is how the Bills kind of want to do things as a team, whether it's Jackson Hawes or Dalton Kincaid. Is that Kincaid's best game with the Bills, right? He kind of showcases a lot of what he's able to do. The touchdown, he nearly had a second one. Allen looks for him on another play as well. Like we really got a good full boat of Kincaid, and the tight ends as a group and where they function as a function of this offense.
This was everybody eats. That's what it was. 10 people had targets. 9 guys had receptions. 5, 6 players had 2 or more receptions. How many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 players had double-digit yardage or higher. The highest being Dalton Kincaid at 66. He was really good. Both Chris Brown this week, I'll give him credit, and I said on the pregame show that the tight ends should probably factor into this game because the Dolphins just didn't have good coverage from their linebackers. They're not great at the second level at covering. And the Bills took advantage of that early on. They attacked it. And Dalton Kincaid was targeted early and often. I would agree this could be considered maybe his best game in a Bills uniform. And what's really great to see about Dalton Kincaid is he is blocking really well. And there are plays every game, including this game, where he is making a block. I think there was one on Shakir's.
The touchdown.
Was it Shakir?
Yeah,
because I know Tyrell Shavers might have had one on that one, too. I'm not sure. But he's making blocks, too. He's doing his job in the run game. And then when you add Jackson Hawes in there, I talked to the tight ends not Dalton. I talked to Dawson and Jackson Hawes in the locker room about this, about what it does to a defense when you have, when you could put 13 personnel on the field and you're not just pounding the ball at them, because that's what you think about 13 personnel. And they just both like lit up and said, that's the dream, right? Where you put three tight ends on the field and teams just still don't know what you're going to do. And the Bills have really leaned into that and they've used that. So this was everybody eats. This is exactly the way that the Bills envision it with, you know, how they want to operate their offense.
And that personnel, Sal, you tweeted out the snap counts. It is kind of wild to see how much three tight ends can play. Like when your third string tight end is on the field for almost half the snaps. And it's a big day for James Cook. And a lot of those big runs that he had, especially in the first half, he had a sequence where I feel like he had five runs in a row that were all gaining like six or more yards. And a lot of those big runs he was getting, Sal, were when all three of the tight ends were on the field.
No doubt. And again, you're going to put a defense in a bind, because traditionally when you see that package, you can just kind of load up the box and say, okay, they're coming at us. I don't think you could do that when the Bills put their 13 on the field. Now, you still might want to, given the down and distance situation, but the fact is the Bills can throw out of that. They can still run with the quarterback out of that. They can do what they did with Jackson Hawes, which is leak him out. By the way, Jackson Hawes has a block, and Matthew Judon, he puts Matthew Judon to the ground before he catches a touchdown pass.
A defensive end.
I mean, you think about that's what these guys can do. So you're right, Joe. I mean, the Bills just want to use that type of personnel. And every game is going to be different. You're not going to see that every game. You're going to see maybe another game where you don't have as much 13 personnel. They didn't want to use it as much against the Ravens as they did until later in the game, when they saw that there was a few things they could do with that type of personnel. And that's how they got Jackson Hawes down the field. So there's going to be some games where you're not going to use it as much. But this was, I think, the typical kind of philosophical game the Bills want to play. They didn't execute a lot at times the way they wanted to. You know, they had how many straight, a series with a punt, and that's not good. So it wasn't always the best or flawless execution, no doubt about it. But I think overall, the philosophy of how they want to win kind of played into this game.
Sal Capaccio joining us. Sal, let's get to the defense and how they performed. Third down defense, it was great against the Jets. I think a big part of that was how they got them into third and very long in that game. But the third down defense kind of rears its ugly head or whatever. Gets back to the problem it was last year. They could not get off the field consistently. Tua finding Jalen Waddle, Tua finding scrambles. What do you make of the defensive performance overall, and specifically as we dig into third down, which we know has been a focal point for McDermott and for Brandon Bean this offseason?
Third down defense wasn't good. And what's troubling about what you just said is right, because they also had third and longs here and they couldn't get them off the field. Miami converted several third and longs. But overall, 10 for 15, when you hold the team 0 for 11, that's amazing. But 10 for 15 is just unacceptable. You can't have that. That being said, I think the reasons for that were mostly the fact that the Bills did not finish their pass rush. They did not finish sacks. They got around Tua, but they didn't get to Tua. And uncharacteristically, we don't see this a lot from Tua, he was able to get out of the pocket, and he was able to scramble, and then he was able to make some throws down the field. So I think, to me, that was a reason why. They blitz, too. And when you blitz and you don't get home, you guys know what happens. You leave holes, right? And I think that was part of an issue. So third down defense was an issue. But I think the biggest issue on third down was they just didn't get to the quarterback. You have to get to the quarterback. When it's third and long and you're going to send pressure, like, you got to get home. Because if not, you're going to have too many opportunities for spaces down the field to make a play. And what's a double-edged sword? You say, well, they don't blitz. That's fine, but then you're going to give him more time in the pocket. Uncharacteristically, though, I say, because he's just not known to be a scrambler. He scrambled. He got out of the pocket. He threw the ball on target a couple of those times. And he even ran for one himself. So the Bills will have to clean that up. They'll go back and figure out.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
See, but more of the biggest issue to me wasn't the overall numbers on third down. Yes, that looks bad. It was the fact that they just could not. They only had five total quarterback hurries, by the way, in this game, credited with. Five quarterback hurries, zero sacks, five quarterback hurries. They needed more out of the defensive ends. Joey Bosa, to me, was fine. But he got close. He didn't finish the play. Like, you got to finish. But you didn't get anything from Rousseau. You didn't get anything from Epinesa. It's just you didn't really get anybody getting enough of Tua, getting to him and getting him on the ground, because typically you get that when you play him.
Yeah, that's where, like so you said like earlier, you know, like some people are upset that they didn't win by more. I wouldn't qualify myself as upset for sure. Like, disappointment in a couple of areas would be more accurate, and one of them is that. Like, really, it's the Dolphins' two weakest units are their secondary and their offensive line, and it didn't really feel like the Bills took crazy advantage of either of those. And on that offensive line point, like, I think that's going to be tough for a guy like Tre'Davious White if you're not going to get home and you're going to supply pressure, because then you're putting him in a bind where he's got to cover Jaylen Waddle one-on-one at this stage in his career, Sal, and maybe the hope would be later in the year that Max Hairston could be a guy that could give you that, but Trey White's not going to be able to cover a receiver like that one-on-one.
Yeah, I gave downs to both White and Benford for that very reason, Joe. I just thought there was too much space, but again, you got to get home too, and when it's third and long, you're going to give them a little bit of space and say, okay, we're going to try and keep things in front of us, but when you got to cover for that extra second and a half, it makes it a lot tougher. So there's no doubt. I mean, you'd love to see a better performance and closer coverage and knocking some balls away. Trey had a real nice bat away of a ball intended for Achan. But overall, I thought there was too much space for Waddle and Tyreek to operate. They had a total of 10 catches. They both scored. Now, neither of them went truly off, right? I think 60-something and 50-something yards or something like that, whatever it was, 60 and 30. So, you know, the numbers were okay, but they both scored. But there were just critical times of the game, third downs where those guys found themselves open. And a lot of times it was on third and long because you're giving them a little bit more space. And then all of a sudden, pass rush doesn't get home. Tua's out of the pocket. He extends the play a little bit. Sean McDermott talked about it after the game. Extending the play was a few times was what Tua did. And on the other side, Joe, I agree. The weakest part of the Dolphins, the secondary and the second level, where the Bills were great at attacking the second level early on. I don't know what adjustment the Dolphins made, or the Bills just didn't go back to it, because I thought they should have gone back to it in the second half. They didn't. The Bills attempted one pass over 10 yards the whole game in the air. That's it. I don't know if you guys saw that stat that was tweeted this morning.
We did.
The Bills and Dolphins tied for the lowest amount of total air yards attempted in a game, or whatever, because the Dolphins threw behind the line of scrimmage a lot. But I'm going to say this before I make a sweeping judgment about that. I want to see what the Dolphins did to maybe keep everything underneath, right? You have Josh Allen, and it's, why can't Joe Brady throw deep? Why can't he call these plays? There were definitely times Josh Allen looked at downfield and then he checked it down. No, I mean, you can see it on the field. He's looking downfield and then he checks it down. And why is that? Probably because it's either one of two things, really, or maybe both. Maybe the receivers aren't separating downfield, or maybe the Dolphins are just playing a shell, and you can't throw it there because they're not giving you anything there.
Yeah, I wonder too, as those start to creep out. We'll see some of those film clips on social media, and people watch it themselves. There's a play where I just saw Coleman is coming open down the sideline, 25 yards away, and Allen no, quick pop 5 yards to James Cook. Like, that's a throw where maybe he could have made it. In fact, he's probably going to be able to make it, but he's taking the "I'm not going to put the ball in harm's way here" play.
That's right. And I think what we've learned is that Josh has learned that it's better to survive another play than to take an unnecessary risk, especially when you have a defense that takes the ball away generally, and you're probably going to the more risk that you minimize, you'll have a better chance to win. It didn't hurt them in this game on the final score. But this was a tie game late in the game, right? And maybe if you take a shot down the field, maybe you have the ability to break something open, no doubt about it. But at the same time, Josh Allen, guys, he completed almost 80% of his passes for three touchdown passes, right? So as much as it wasn't, that's the funny thing about it. Like, we're talking, and again, I'll be the first to tell you, like, man, there were struggles from the offense. And then you look up at the end of the day, 31 points and three touchdown passes thrown, right? Like, well, how did that happen?
Well, was that the problem for you when they were stifled, like three punts in a row? It ends up being two because of the penalty. Was it also that the run game kind of hit a little bit of a rough patch there too, or was it everything?
I think at the time that it happened, that was for me, like, this is not. It felt like the Bills should have ran away with this game, and they didn't because they did not get any points in that sequence where they had the ball down to the Miami 16-yard line. They didn't score because they go incomplete. No gain. I think it was incomplete. And then the sack by Allen and then the missed field goal. That was a huge sequence, to be honest with you guys. Like, after that missed field goal, the Dolphins come down the field and score. And now you're in a tie game. And now the game gets a little bit tighter. Now you can't play as free and loose. I think if the Bills score a touchdown on that drive, they go up two scores. I mean, maybe Miami has to start being a little bit more one-dimensional early in the game. Miami could keep you off balance now because of that. To me, that was a huge sequence. So it was really when it happened, Joe. And, you know, thankfully, the Bills did score a touchdown on their first drive of the second half. But then they go three plays, 7 yards, six plays, 15 yards. Like, it just wasn't good enough at that point. They had, you would love to see them put them away earlier. They didn't put them away. That was, I think, what happened of why the Dolphins were able to stay in the game. You needed to get one more score to put a little distance and say, okay, Miami, you got to play catch up now.
803-0550. Mike in Pennsylvania with Sal. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Hey, guys, good morning. Hey, yeah, I'm impressed with the personnel that they're running on the offense, but I'm really super intrigued on how this defense is going to evolve. And what I mean that is there's a couple people injured. There's a couple rookies that need to come in. I think there's moves that we can get better if we stay healthy down the stretch. So that's really got me excited because I don't want to play the best ball at the beginning of the year. I'd like to play it going into the playoffs, and I really have hope for the two rookies in the front, especially Deion Walker, who played an excellent – when he was in there, he played excellent. Maybe Hancock at safety, maybe they make a move. I love Trey White, but he didn't have his best game yesterday. Maybe Dorian Strong starts to play a role on the team. So there is moves the Bills can make to get this defense where it needs to be heading into the playoffs.
Sal, to this point, I want to ask you, I was going to get to this, Hairston's timeline. Talk to us about Hairston's timeline. I mean, when he got hurt, he'd flashed, but he was not, at that point, winning the job. And, you know, we expect that to come in time. What do you think is a realistic timeline for Hairston to be full speed, up and running? And are the Bills obviously, like, aware of the possibility of a Cole Bishop scenario where you missed a lot of time, and that's going to be tough for him to kind of make up the mental reps while also getting healthy and being game ready?
Well, I think the Bills are very aware of it. I don't know if fans are ready for it, to be honest with you. I mean, I think fans might see the game from Tre'Davious White last night, and then if Max Hairston, you know, is eligible to start, if they start practicing him, let's say, in another week and a half, 2 weeks after game four, because that's when he's eligible. Just to go operational here for the timeline, he needs to miss one more game. So does Tyler Bass. But once he misses one more game, if the team feels he's healthy enough to be able to play again, they'll put him on the practice field. Once he's on the practice field, he has 21 days to practice before they have to activate him. So it could be another 3 weeks after that. It could be after the bye week before they even activate him, because they'd have 21 days to do that. That being said, guys, I mean, he got this, how long? It's been over a month now, right? I mean, it was before the first preseason game. Hard Knocks had just showed up, I think. It was not too long into training camp. So what's that look like as far as a ramp up and getting back and how much time missed? And when I say, like, are fans ready for it? Like, I think there's going to be to me, there are going to be too many people that will have an unreasonable expectation that he's just going to walk back in and be able to take a job and play. It's not going to work like that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the mental reps, the physical, everything. And, I mean, at the same time, he's got to actually practice to get on the field and make sure he is healthy. You can't just activate him after 4 weeks and say he's ready to go after not playing football on a sprained knee for 2 months, right? So I think people have to at least understand that. The caller says, you know, help could come. Look, I think help comes in the form of Michael Hoyt. I'm really excited for what he could do to add to this defense. I think Michael Hoyt is going to be a really big key to this defense in a piece when – you know, he is healthy. And I think the Bills have plans for how to use him. I loved what I saw from him And now is he the end all fix all? Of course not. Third downs or whatever you want to call it. Like, it doesn't suddenly come in and, you know, make your defense, you know, the 85 Bears. Is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, though, I just think he is a guy that's really going to help as far as what you want to do personnel-wise, schematically, against teams. So that's the timeline of Max Harrison, by the way. We're three games in. So anybody who was placed on IR, including Tyler Bass, they have one more game. And then Hoyt and Ogunjobi, they have to still sit for three more games. However, they can start practicing after the next game with the team. They just can't be activated, and they can't be on the field until after 6 weeks.
And Ogunjobi, Sal, we should maybe consider him. The Bills are getting, I think, a nice surprise from Deion Walker early, but T.J. Sanders, not as much on the interior. So I think Ogunjobi would be dressing for these games unless Sanders makes a big jump.
Yeah, that's a good point, because this past last week, Matt Bove and I had a really good debate about Landon Jackson and about him getting a jersey or not getting a jersey. And Matt's basic point was, look, your third-round pick's got to be getting a jersey. If he's not, something's going wrong. My point is, well, I think that's a sign of a strong roster. It's a third-round pick. Like, I don't know what to expect from year one. Like, there's guys ahead of him. That's fine. You could fall wherever you want. But look, guys, I mean, when Ogunjobi comes back, isn't there a possibility that T.J. Sanders doesn't get a jersey?
Yeah. Very possible.
And, I mean, he's your second-round pick.
Yeah, I mean, that won't look good.
Well, right? Listen.
I don't know. See, that's the debate. I mean, you're right. It won't look good for him, but who does it not look good for?
Well,
who's he supposed to play over?
I think it doesn't look good for Landon Jackson that he can't get over last year's fifth-round pick that plays 10 snaps.
Right, and I think it all comes down to how they look in January, and that's what really matters.
That's right.
So if you tell me Landon Jackson and T.J. Sanders aren't dressing now, and Max Harrison is rehabbing and going to take a little time, but by the time we get to December, the Bills are their finished form of defense and ready to do the best they can, then I'll take that. But the answer to the question of who does that look bad for is Beam. If like your second and third and round picks are not contributing, he does have the fourth and fifth, which they actually tend to hit quite a bit. But if you draft a lot of linemen and they don't dress your young guys, I mean, in the short term, it looks bad for the GM. But again, like they could certainly pan out and be just fine.
Right, and that's my contention, which is I actually think it just is a sign of a healthy, strong roster. Because if you're not the Carolina Panthers, right? I mean, second and third round picks better play right away. I mean, the Buffalo Bills, you would love in a dream scenario, all your young guys play. But that also means that you have spots where they can play, right? I mean, like, I think the whole point is to build a roster where when you draft a guy in the third round, if he's not getting a jersey, and you could say, well, I can't believe he can't beat out Javon Solomon, but do you think he should? I don't know. Maybe, next year, A.J. Epenesa's not on this team probably. He's a free agent. I don't know about Joey Bosa. Like, this is why you develop talent. This is the debate, though, and it's fine. I had no issue either way. I'm saying, though, I think it's a healthy debate, and it's a good discussion. I don't think it's as clear-cut. There's a lot of nuance here, right? I mean, like, if Landon Jackson or T.J. Sanders, when Ogunjobi comes back, no doubt you could say they never should have signed Larry Ogunjobi, and that could be on the GM or whoever, and they signed him and all of that. But at the same time, you could also say, man, like, they got guys, they're drafting guys, they're developing, and this is what it's supposed to look like on the back end.
803-0550, our phone number. Thanks, Sal. Extra Point
you
Show coming
guys.
Up today, 10 o'clock. All right. Sal Capaccio is Arrow Up, Arrow Down. We can get to all of it, but you can find that at our website, WGR550.com. Bills go to 3-0, 31-21, beating the Dolphins. It is Buffalo Bills Football Friday, and Football Friday is brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino, call the 8s, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, Crosby's Hometown Fuel. Game day ready since 1922.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.